Every leader I've ever worked with who was stuck, I mean genuinely stuck, not just temporarily slowed, they all had one thing in common. The problem they were trying to solve was not the actual problem. They were working on behavior. Things like adjusting strategy, changing systems, managing people differently. And the results either did not come or they didn't last because the real problem was not any of those things. The real problem was the lens they were looking through, the map they were navigating from, the paradigm that was quietly shaping every perception, every interpretation, every conclusion they reached before they had made a single conscious decision about how to respond. Truth is, you can't fix a map problem by driving faster. You can't fix a paradigm problem by working harder or thinking more positively or even applying a more sophisticated technique. The problem and the solution are not at the same level. The solution is always deeper than the problem feels. That's what this episode is all about today. Not your behavior, not your strategy. It's all about the lens through which you see everything and what it takes to change it. And it's all right here, right now, and only on the Five Gifts Podcast.
You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host, Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. Well, welcome back to the Five Gifts Podcast. I'm Bruce Ritter alongside Charles Russell, and we're on episode 22 of this season. It's actually the second episode in our Internal Foundation series, and today we're talking about your mindset and the lens of your potential. So I want to welcome everyone again. Usually tell you that we record every Monday morning, so it's a Monday morning for us, and already off camera we've had all kinds of mishaps and missteps and camera malfunctions, but we're glad to be with you and glad that you're joining us, whether you're catching us on the ride home from the gym, maybe you're on your way to work on a Thursday morning, but we're glad that you're with us, and we hope this, not only this episode, but the series will be beneficial for you personally as a leader. We really care about your development, and I think that comes through on our podcast. Charles, what's happening in your world?
Well, I'm trying to get past all the bloopers and the mistakes and mess-ups, and you know, I don't know, who knows what's going to happen as we continue, but I'll tell you what, we could really put together a fantastic bloopers reel. In fact, let us know in the comments, would you like to see the bloopers? It might be more entertaining than our regular content.
I would give a thumbs down on that. I would give a thumbs down on that, but I'm afraid my camera might do something weird.
Yeah. doing very well. Thanks for asking, Bruce. What a great weekend we've had. And I tell you, we're my wife and I, we're working with a church that's getting ready to start searching for a new pastor. They asked us to come and help them. And we've just really enjoyed that process, getting to know the church and being able to speak there each week, each Sunday, and meet with their leadership. And just really begin to form up the process for their search. And so we're really enjoying that. But I'm telling you, I'm excited to be in the room this morning to learn and discuss and talk as we continue this series about our mindset. So, in episode one, we established the foundational premise of this entire series. Lasting transformation follows an inside-out process. And so it begins with the most internal dimension of the person. It begins with our character, paradigm, motive, and then it works outward from there. We talked about the deep problems that surface really repeatedly, so it's not a one-time action. These kind of things surface repeatedly in high-performing leaders. And the critical difference between character-based and personality-based approaches to effectiveness, and then the foundational freedom to choose our response regardless of our circumstances.
And today we're going to go deeper into the specific mechanism that really makes all of that either possible or impossible. And honestly, it comes down to your mindset, not just your mindset as a leader, but your mindset as a person. There are paradigms that we carry about ourselves, about others, about what's possible and what a person fundamentally is and can become. And we're going to cover how those paradigms actually function and why they're so difficult to see from the inside. The difference between a fixed orientation toward potential and a growth-oriented one. What it looks like in practice, and when a leader shifts the lens through which they see the people they lead, and the proactive discipline that makes sustained mindset development possible. So, you know, this is not an abstract conversation. I think it'll be fascinating. And I think by the end of the episode, we want you to have something specific and actionable, not just a framework to think about, but really something that you can affirm both in practice and in just day-to-day leadership.
Well, let's start then at the foundation of the whole conversation. What a paradigm actually is, how it functions, and why most of us have never examined our paradigm with any real seriousness. So a paradigm is the way you see the world, not with your eyes, but with your understanding. It's the interpretive framework, if you will, that you bring to every experience, every conversation, every piece of information you encounter. It's not the territory, but it is the map that you use to navigate the territory. And maps can be accurate or inaccurate. They can be detailed, they can be simplified, they can be current or even outdated. And the truth is, the quality of your navigation really depends entirely on the quality of your map, regardless of how skillfully you drive. And so the navigation analogy is worth kind of sitting with for a moment. Let's say that suppose you're trying to reach a specific location in Chicago. You have a map, but due to a printing error, the map labeled Chicago is actually a map of Detroit. Now, you drive, you're very competent, you drive diligently, with genuine effort, a great attitude, you follow the map carefully, and you arrive consistently and efficiently at the wrong destination. Well, the problem is not your effort. The problem is not your attitude. The problem is not even your technique. You were 10-2 the whole way. The problem is the map. And no amount of improvement in the other dimensions are going to compensate for working from an inaccurate map. The only solution is a better map. And most leaders accept the maps they're working from as really as reality itself. And so we experience our perceptions not as interpretations, as one possible way of reading a situation, but as straightforward, objective accounts of what's actually happening. You know, the colleague who is difficult, the team member who's underperforming, the situation that's impossible, the pattern that keeps recurring. We experience all of these as facts rather than as filtered perceptions that are shaped by maps we've never examined. One of the most common and most distorting sources of our maps is what we might call the social mirror. That's the accumulated reflections that we've received from the people around us throughout our lives. A parent who communicated, maybe in words or in silence, that you just weren't quite enough. Maybe a teacher who told you that you weren't told you what you were not capable of, or could have been a leader who defined you by your worst moment rather than your best potential. A culture that handed you a story about yourself before you had the language to question it. The problem with a social mirror is not that it's always wrong. The problem is that it's always partial. It's always filtered through the perceptions and limitations of the person who's reflecting it back. And it's always a description of what someone observed rather than what you actually are. So accepting a distorted reflection as your map is not just inaccurate, it's an abdication of self-awareness. And the leaders who've done the most interior work are almost universally the ones who have learned to examine the social mirror critically rather than accepting its verdicts without question.
Charles, that's a powerful concept, and I think maybe before we proceed any further, I think it's important to remind our listeners that, you know, we talk about the makeup of your internal map. So there certainly are a lot of factors that help you shape that. And let's not forget spiritual realities. You know, your identity as a leader really begins with your identity in Christ. And I think that's really important that you assimilate that. And then you begin to look at the lens of the world, your social constructs, your social formative dynamics, that you're always, you know, keeping the reality of that you are a child of God, you belong to Christ, and not only who you are, but who you're becoming. I mean, one of the great things about serving Jesus is we never have to stay where we are. We're always becoming more and more like Him as we, you know, follow the leading of the Holy Spirit and allow Him to shape us. And so I think that's really important, and it's hopeful. So I'd like to encourage all of our listeners. Charles laid down some incredible dynamic things that we need to consider when it comes to that internal map that we create. And by all means, never discount your own personal walk with Christ. You know, understanding what paradigms are and how they function, but that's just really the first step. There really is more a specific distinction that matters enormously for the practical work of leadership. That's a distinction that shapes just not how you see yourself, but really how you see every person you're responsible for leading. So let's talk about the fixed mindset versus a growth mindset, because that really is what shapes the lens of potential that you're looking through day to day. I think the most consequential paradigm a leader carries is not their view of the market, the organization, the strategy, or even the harvest in front of you. Really, it is the view of the potential of people that you're working with, the ones that God has given you. Specifically, whether they fundamentally believe that the people around them are in a fixed are fixed in their current capacity, or whether they carry a genuine conviction that people can grow and develop and become significantly more than they currently are. And again, remember, as a leader, especially as a spiritual leader, not only are you in process, but you're working with people that are in process. And you know, we believe that as a spiritual leader, that you have a hand, you have influence. Probably, I think, Charles, I think you probably agree that innate in our leadership influence in the body of Christ as spiritual leaders is that we are helping people become more and more like Christ. We equip people to be more like Jesus. But when we talk about that mindset in people, the fixed mindset versus a growth mindset, there is just a powerful book. I've just been into it myself. It's developed by Carol Dweck, and she was coming from the education world. And she gives us language for two orientations. One is a fixed mindset that believes that qualities like your intelligence, your talent, your character, your capability, they're essentially stable. They're fixed, if you will. You have what you have. You are what you are. Performance is really a demonstration of underlying capacity rather than a point in a developmental arc. Now, a growth mindset believes something different. A growth mindset believes that qualities are developed through effort, experience, and engagement. That current performance is not a verdict on permanent potential. It's just a starting point to see what's possible. Now, you think the reason for this, why does this matter? Well, it matters profoundly for leaders in that our paradigms about other people function as kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Those expectations we carry, they can unconsciously and often, rather than rarely, they almost never are examined. They shape our behavior toward others in ways that elicit the very responses that confirm what we've already believed. And so a leader at the level of their deepest operative paradigm believes that a team member is pretty limited and is going to communicate that belief through small signals of communication leadership, and like how they assign work and responsibilities. How you as a leader respond to another person's mistakes. Sometimes we have that fixed in our mind that someone who's made a mistake, that's going to be the sum total of their potential, at least in your organization. You're going to look at how they invest their time, how they speak about their potential to others. And so the person on the receiving end of those signals will often, over time, just continue performing in ways that confirm your paradigm. This is sometimes it reminds me of the Pygmalion story. And so we call it the Pygmalion effect. That's the phenomenon of expectation produces the outcome it expected. And the inverse is equally real. A leader who genuinely believes in someone's potential, who holds a vision of what that person could become that's larger than what the person has currently accomplished for themselves or achieved in life, when you communicate that belief in ways that can literally expand what the other person is capable of producing. If I could put that in concrete terms, I've seen this play out in family contexts in ways that I think every leader can recognize. For example, you see a child struggling, they're socially immature, academically behind, and not keeping pace with visible markers of development that parents instinctively use to measure the child's progress. The initial response is what most well-meaning parents and leaders reach for. Things like encouragement, protection, coaching. We tell them things, you've heard these phrases before, keep your eye on the ball, you can do this, let me help you. All of it sincere, but nothing really produces real change. And so the reason that all those responses were flowing, from an operative paradigm that the child could feel even when the word said something different. Remember, the underlying belief, maybe never spoken, but it's present, was this person needs to be fixed. And no amount of positive language layered on top of a fixed mindset paradigm can actually produce the results of genuine belief in someone's potential. So the change comes when the paradigm changes, when the question shifts from how do I help him perform better to who this person is actually becoming and how do I see and affirm that. When protection gives way to trust, the implicit communication that you're fundamentally capable of navigating your own experience. When comparison is a social standard, gave way to genuine affection to the unique development arc of that particular person. And the person responds, not because the external approach changes, but because the internal conviction driving the approach changed first.
And that's really profound, Bruce. And really leading us down a great path. So this, you know, this is where the inside-out principle becomes most personally challenging, because changing the lens through which you see another person requires, first of all, an honest examination of the lens through which you see yourself. And so the paradigms that limit our view of others are almost always projections of paradigms we carry about our own adequacy, our own capacity, our own relationship to failure and growth. So most of us built our operative paradigms, you know, the maps that we're actually navigating from sources that we didn't choose and probably cannot even fully remember choosing. You know, the family system we grew up in with its unspoken rules about what's possible, what's dangerous, and who we are, what we're worth, experiences of failure, success that landed on us before we ever had the interpretive framework to process them accurately. The voices of authority, those authority figures whose assessments of us we probably internalized as verdicts rather than receiving them as just one limited perspective among many perspectives. These maps, they're not always wrong, but some of what we absorb is accurate and useful. Much of it, however, is distorted in ways that we've never truly examined. And the distortions, they don't announce themselves, but what they do is present themselves as reality. A simple, obvious, objective truth about how things are. So the personality ethic, that's the approach to effectiveness that we discussed in episode one. It works at the surface of this. It offers techniques for managing the impressions that you make, strategies for navigating the social environment more skillfully, practices for projecting the qualities you want to be perceived as having. And these things can produce results, but probably only in the short term. They don't address the map. They improve the driver without changing the navigation system. And eventually, the inaccuracy of the map catches up with the skill of the driver. So the character ethic addresses the map itself. Integrity, you know, the alignment between what you believe and how you actually live. That's not a technique. That's the condition of a person who has examined their maps honestly, who have identified the distortions, committed to navigating from something more accurate and much more durable than social conditioning or performance-based identity. And so the shift from personality to character is not primarily a behavioral shift, it's a paradigm shift. And it requires the willingness to sit with questions that most high-performing leaders are very skilled at avoiding. That's a heavy truth, but you know, it's the questions of who am I when no one's watching? What do I actually believe about my own work? Independent of my performance, what does the gap between my public leadership and my private life tell me about the maps I'm working from? Where am I projecting my own limitations onto the people that I lead? Now I know these are not comfortable questions in the slightest. They are, however, the questions that make the difference between leaders who are effective for a season and leaders who build something that lasts.
Charles, I was listening to those questions. I just pictured myself in a coaching appointment listening, someone asking me those questions. Those are powerful introspections. And so please go back and catch the transcript. Those questions are powerful to ask yourself. And again, you're right, Charles, they're absolutely uncomfortable questions, you know, but all of this, these examinations of our paradigms, making that shift from fixed to growth orientation, that move from personality ethic to the character ethic, that requires a practical foundation to stand on. And because insight without practice is not transformation, it's just more information. And the foundational practice we're describing is what we called in episode one, if you remember, proactivity. That's the discipline of operating from the gap between stimulus and response. So let's talk about that for a minute, because really, this is the practice that sustains your shift. A lot of momentum gets lost here, and so we want to talk about this carefully and practically. You might remember Charles brought up Viktor Frankl last week, and in referencing Frankl, how Frankl discovered his discovery in the concentration camps was not a motivational insight. It's a description of a fundamental feature of human consciousness that most people never learn to access because nothing in their formation has required them to do it. Usually between what happens to you and what you do in response, there's a space. That space is where your freedom lives. And the size of that space, as you access to it, your ability to operate from within it rather than collapsing it in a moment of some reactionary impulse, that's a capacity that can be developed. It's not fixed. It doesn't have to stay fixed. It's not determined by your temperament or your history or even your neurological pathways. It's a skill, and like every skill, it's built through practice. Proactive people are not people who feel less. They're not people who are unaffected by difficulty. They're not people immune to frustration or somehow above the emotional reality of their circumstances. They're simply people who have developed the discipline of not letting their feelings make their decisions for them. They're people who have practiced repeatedly in small things first, the act of choosing their response, rather than defaulting to their impulse or even their conditioning. So the circle of influence, we might call, is the practical geography of this discipline. where every situation you face involves some things that you can affect, as well as some things you can't, like the weather, other people's choices, the organization's history, the economy, a colleague's personality. So your reactive self wants to spend energy on the things outside of your control. You want to analyze them and you want to worry about them. You want to lose sleep over them. You don't really want to lose sleep, but you do lose sleep. You wish them to be different. You resent them. That's a lot of sleepless nights. And that expenditure of energy produces nothing except a growing sense of futility and powerlessness and a shrinking circle of actual influence. The proactive discipline is to notice that pull and redirect. It's to learn something about yourself, to learn your tendencies. It's to ask consistently and specifically, what can I actually affect here? That's a great question. What's within your reach? What response is available to you that is genuinely yours to make? And then how can you invest your energy there? That's a great pivot point. Not because you've stopped caring about the things you can't control. Nobody wants you to stop caring about things like that. But because you've decided that your energy is too valuable to spend on territory that doesn't belong to you. The language dimension of this is really worth practicing consciously. Remember, reactive language is I can't, I have to, or there's nothing I can do, or he makes me or she makes me feel a certain way. It comes out in sentences that start like, if only they would. That's not just descriptive. That's formative. And every time you use it, Charles, I think people are reinforcing that paradigm that their responses are determined by things outside their control. Proactive language uses words like, I choose, I will. It says, let's look at what's available. Or let's investigate what's possible here. It's the mindset that says, I can be different here. Now listen, the language of reaction versus the language of proaction, both of those are formative. They establish how you think in a given situation. But the proactive language, where you begin to say, I choose, I will, those are practices in your paradigm where you're the author of your responses. You're not the product of them. It's important that you change the conversation that way. Now, that doesn't mean pretending your circumstances are neutral. It just means insisting on your freedom within them.
Yeah, wow. What a great shift you're teaching us, where we're not the product. We're the author. And that really changes the dynamic and changes the perspective. It changes the whole outlook. I mean, it should as leaders. We have the ability and the capacity to be the author, and not the victim. So, we could stop right there and take up the offering, turn out the lights, and I'll go home. But before we close, with every head bowed, every eye closed, there's one more principle we need to kind of talk about that holds all this together. At the practical level, it's the relationship between what you're producing and the capacity that produces it. Because mindset development is not just a personal growth pursuit. It's a leadership sustainability issue. Every leader is managing a relationship between two things: the results they're producing and the capacity that makes those results possible. Aesop's fable names this with permanent clarity. You remember the goose and the golden egg? So let's travel back in time and let's all sit in our reading circle together. No, let's don't do that. But remember the farmer who kills the goose to get all the eggs at once? He destroys the very asset that was making his life abundant. He was so focused on accelerating production that he liquidated the thing that was producing. So this pattern, it shows, if you look, it shows up everywhere in leadership. The leader who runs their team at full capacity with no investment in development or recovery, producing the results of this season while gradually exhausting the people who make those results possible. The leader who invests exclusively in organizational output with no investment in their own interior development. Maybe performing at a high level today while the interior foundation slowly erodes. The leader who borrows from relational trust to force outcomes, get in the compliance they need this week while spending down the currency that makes genuine commitment possible over time. We called this borrowing strength in the last episode, and it's worth naming again here in the context of mindset, because the growth-oriented paradigm is precisely the paradigm that resists this pattern. A leader who genuinely believes in the potential of the people they lead invests in that potential rather than extracting from it. They think about their team members' development in terms of what they could become, not just what they can produce today. They manage the goose with at least as much care as they manage the eggs. Man, what a profound way to say it. They manage themselves the same way. The interior work of this series, the examination of paradigms, the development of proactivity, even the cultivation of character, it's not a personal indulgence. It is the maintenance of the goose. And it's what makes sustainable leadership possible over a decade rather than a sprint.
Charles, you never cease to amaze me on your illustrations here. I'm thinking about lots of gooses that we have to manage. And if I'm honest, I've been the goose before. I'm sure you've been the goose before. Someone had to manage us. And so if you're thinking about your current situation, remember, you've been on the other end of it before, and you wanted someone to believe in you. You wanted someone to manage you productively rather than just try to get everything they could out of you. To me, there's shades of the golden rule there, that we want to do unto others as we'd have them do unto us. And I think that's a tremendous principle for leadership. So let me give you something specific to carry into the next few weeks. Not as a program to complete, but just a place to start. Three commitments. Would you first spend a week just listening to your own language? Start taking mental notes, not evaluating it, not correcting it in real time. Just listen to yourself. Notice the very instance of reactive framing where you started with words like, I can't, I have to, there's nothing I can do, they make me. Write it down. Take time to write it down. You can't examine a map if you haven't looked at it directly. A second thing I would do is identify a person in your leadership context. Could be a team member, could be a family member, a direct report, toward whom you're aware of carrying a fixed mindset paradigm. Not someone you've written off consciously, but someone about whom you carry a very quiet, settled conclusion about their ceiling. Sit with this question. The question is simply this: what would it look like to genuinely hold a different view of what this person could become? And then follow that up with, how would that change your behavior toward them this week? So consider that. And thirdly, identify a recurring situation. Just, again, this is going to take you a few days, but identify a recurring situation where you consistently respond reactively, where your conditioning runs faster than your decision-making. This week, before the situation arises, spend time in the gap. Imagine it. Visualize a response that comes from your values rather than your impulse. Practice that response in your imagination before you need it in reality. Because the gap between stimulus and response is a muscle, and it's built on the moments before you, not only the moments when it's tested. And I would add this, Charles, I just want to encourage our listeners to make these matters of prayer. Ask for the Holy Spirit to open your eyes to help you see these tendencies. I've found the Holy Spirit to be a tremendous psychiatrist, someone that can help me see trends in the way I think. And so I would really encourage that. Charles, what would you add before we close today?
Well, as you're praying and reflecting, working through these exercises Bruce has suggested. The question we want to leave you with is this. Where is the map that you're currently navigating from keeping you from the life and the leadership that you're actually capable of? It's a very important question to ask, not as a condemnation, but as an invitation to look at the map honestly, maybe for the first time, and to ask whether it's accurate enough to take you where you genuinely want to go. The gate of change opens from the inside, and the work of opening is exactly what this series is designed to support. So if you want a guide for the interior work that we've been describing, if you want to engage this process with someone walking alongside you rather than navigating it alone, come connect with us at charlesrusselltraining.com or charlesrusselministries.com. At Bruce is at coachingcardia.com. We'd love to navigate with you be a partner in this. We offer spiritual life coaching, leadership development for people that are ready to do the deeper work. And so, again, reach out to us. We would love to come alongside and journey with you. Well, next episode, we're going to move from the lens of the mind to the first primary habit of intentional living, beginning with the end in mind. What does that mean to orient your daily decisions toward a clear, values-driven picture of what you ultimately want your life to have been? And how do you build that picture with enough specificity to actually navigate by it? We're going to talk about all those questions next week on the next episode. So we'll see you next time on the Five Gifts Podcast.
You've been listening to the Five Gifts Podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments that give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.